Hi, welcome back to another episode of Real World Serverless, a podcast where I speak with real world practitioners and get their stories from the trenches. Today, I'm joined by Anahit. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ian. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It was really nice to meet you at the AWS Community Day in Stockholm.
It was really nice to meet you as well. I was looking forward to your talk and was hoping that my talk won't overlap with yours so I can listen to you as well. And it didn't. So,
yeah, so that all worked out quite nicely. And I really enjoy your talk about all the things that you've been doing with Kinesis and pretty high scale as well. I thought that was quite impressive.
Oh, thank you.
So let's go straight into that. Can you tell us a little bit about Solitor and what you've been building with serverless?
Sure. So, as you said, I'm Anahit. I'm a software engineer from a company called Solitor. And it's a Finland-found company. It was founded like 24 years ago or so. And at the moment, we have over 1,000 professionals working for us in 6 different countries. So we have Finland, Sweden, Denmark, Estonia, and also Belgium and Germany. And we do a lot of different things. We do software development, we do cloud and integration services, analytics, data science, and we do also some strategic consultancy and service design as well. But I personally have been working as a software engineer, as I said, and been doing full stack development really for over a decade. Have done it all, like back-end, front-end integrations, data engineering, all that kind of stuff, and have been doing on-prem development and as well as AWS cloud development. So a lot of things really. And recently, or for several years, I've been working with one of our customers, Wiley, the Finland's national public broadcasting company. You can think of it as the BBC in Finland. And I've been working as a part of a data and AI team over there. So we have been dealing with different data solutions and things like that. And we have been working on AWS, so the entire Wiley organization is using AWS as a cloud provider. And our team in particular, we are focusing on data, on user interaction data mostly, but really all kinds of data. And one thing that we are responsible for is, for example, the recommendation for our streaming service, which is kind of similar to the Netflix recommendation that is probably like familiar for you. And a lot of different like article recommendations and audio recommendations, and also a lot of internal tools using machine learning, a lot of POCs we try, and things like image extraction from a automatic image extraction from a video and from some video clip extraction from a bigger video and things like that. So a lot of interesting things really. And we have a data pipeline that streams about 500 million requests per day, which makes about 0.5 terabyte of data per day, which is quite a considerable amount for Finland if you think about it. And for that we have been using mostly serverless and fully managed services. So we do have a pipeline of Kinesis and Lambdas, and both Kinesis Firehosts, Kinesis Data Streams, Kinesis Analytics. And we have been, I think for a couple of years, that pipeline has been pretty much fully serverless. So we use it for loading data and also some near real-time data analytics. And I must say, I think we haven't had a single problem with the pipeline itself or with the AWS services per se. And all the problems we have, they were mostly related to our own code and our own mistakes. So I think that's pretty good for the scale that we are at. And also we are using serverless for like smaller things. We use it for A/B testing for our recommendation algorithms. And our data scientists have been using it for some POCs that they are doing. And we have some user feature store that is also fully serverless and has a low latency API in front of it. At the moment, we are building a newsletter management system. It's also meant to be pretty much serverless with step functions and lambdas and SQS and stuff like that, and numerous other smaller things. So the nice thing for me is that YLE, the broadcasting company, is actually an excellent customer. They allow us a lot of freedom as developers to choose the technology that we think is more suitable for the use case we are working at. So we have a lot of freedom to try things and see if they are gonna work. And also, a lot of our things were kind of a green grass project, so we didn't have to think about like migrating from on-prem monolith architecture to a serverless cloud-based one. It's a lot of things have been done from scratch, and we always try to evaluate the possible architectures when we go with the new things. And I personally try to think like a serverless first, of course, but it doesn't always work like that. If serverless seems like the correct choice and the best choice for the task at hand, we do go with that. But we also try to kind of explore the serverless scene and try the new technologies that come up and see maybe we can't use it at the moment, but maybe we can have it as a tool to use it later when appropriate use case comes up. So that's been pretty fun, I would say. And of course, if you think about the benefits, the innovation speed is one that everybody brings up. So I must bring it up as well. So it helps, for example, to roll out the new POCs with the new things that our data scientists, for example, come up with pretty quickly and try them out pretty quickly, but also to kill them pretty quickly if things didn't work. So that's pretty good. And as a developer personally, I think less code you have to write, less errors you are going to make. So I'm really all for the existing solutions and existing built-in integrations. And I think Eric Johnson has this saying when he says that use Lambda to transform, not to transport. So I kind of try to follow that in a sense that if we don't need a Lambda, I try to avoid writing a Lambda, like for example with API Gateway direct integrations with the services, which not many are using, but I think they should. So it kind of eliminates the need of the Lambda function altogether, and less of the code you have, in my opinion, is the better. So that's about the things that we are doing.
That's quite a nice range of different things you guys have been working on with serverless. And I kind of agree more with what you said there at the end about having less code is better. And I think one of the things that we as engineers often get it wrong is that we feel that our output, our value that we bring to the company is in the code that we're writing and not seeing the code as actually a cost. And the company don't really care about having code as output. They care about having some business value, some impact, and writing code is just what we often have to do to deliver those value and impact. And the one question I do have though is, you mentioned you guys also building low latency APIs. Is that for doing prediction serving or for actually running your machine learning models?
The one that I mentioned is actually a pretty new one. We have built this user feature store, which we can query for particular features for a user, like gender or age prediction. And it was the requirement was it to have as little latency as possible because it's gonna be used for the machine learning online machine learning algorithms along the line. So we didn't want to pile up the latencies. And that was a big concern, but I think we have managed to keep it under 15 milliseconds, 20 milliseconds in P95 percentile. So I think it's pretty good at the moment. So I don't know, does it qualify for a low latency in your books? But for me, it's pretty low.
Yeah, I think that's always a bit of a gray area. Low latency, how low do you need to go, right? Because even for real-time systems, sometimes it's a couple of seconds is considered real-time. And when you're building live mobile games, multiplayer mobile games, that you're talking about, really want round trip to be less than about 150 milliseconds. So low latency, I think it's good enough.
Yeah, me too. And we had this 100 millisecond kind of hard limit for the entire kind of machine learning part, because after that, users might start noticing that, you know, the latency. So the smaller the API, smaller latency for the API, the better, of course.
So for that, are you guys ever had any troubles with the cold start that you get with Lambda? Are you doing anything special to sort of keep your containers warm?
Yeah, well, as I said, this is a pretty new thing. So we started it before the Lambda provision concurrency actually came up. But at the moment, we don't use anything particular. So we still managed to keep it, as I said, in like 20 millisecond latency area for at least P95. So for that, we try to use different options, but the one that seems to work the best is the API gateway Dynamo Direct integration. So we kind of reduced the Lambda or removed the Lambda altogether at some point from that pipeline.
Yeah, that makes sense, because all the cold start performance issues, things like that, all comes from having a Lambda in between, so that you could go straight from API gateway to, you know, DynamoDB, then you just kind of sidestep that, right?
Of course, but there were different, like the thing that I've noticed with that is that, when we had the Lambda in between, we could regulate the timeouts, right, for the DynamoDB, which is one way to tweak the latencies, so the DynamoDB connection will be retried faster than the default setting. But with API gateway direct integration, you don't have too much control over that. And I think the response times from DynamoDB were affected by that in a way. So it went a bit up compared to the Lambda integration, you know, which was quite interesting to see. But it's still lower. Well, as you've mentioned, we don't have the Lambda cold start issues anymore.
Yeah, with DynamoDB, because I think you mentioned already that it's because you don't have the HTTP keep alive that you can enable on the Lambda, on Lambda function. Another thing I think you also lose as well is when you're using Lambda to call DynamoDB with the SDK, you get built-in retry and exponential backoff, which API Gateway doesn't do that for you. But given your requirement, I still think that's a really reasonable compromise to make, and you can still do some retries on the client side anyway, especially with DynamoDB. If it doesn't get that many errors, maybe you just don't need it as much as that is a nice to have.
Exactly, and it's always the consideration of what are really the requirements. I mean, of course, everybody, if you ask the client, they always will say it fast as possible and no errors and nothing, but like the reality is, we know that we will get some percentage of errors from DynamoDB, for example, and so on, and some latency. So it's the compromise, like what are the actual limits that we have? And in this case, I think we pretty much met the limits that we had.
And it's also a matter of cost as well, because when we talk about reliability and uptime, it's going to cost you a certain amount to get to P99%. But then if you go, want to go to, three nines or four nines and five nines, then the cost of actually achieving that is going to go up exponentially. It's not linear.
Exactly.
And the same goes with performance as well, that you get to a certain level of performance, you want to go any faster, every millisecond is going to cost you so much more than going a millisecond faster than the previous millisecond. I used to work in the banking, and some of these sort of high frequency arbitrage trading systems that we had there, they were going as far as building their own dark cable. That was going to cost the tens of millions just to improve latency by a single digit millisecond. And in some cases, people were doing even crazier things, like using microwave transmission, which is faster than those fiber optic cables over a short distance. So they build massive, really long, kilometers long relays for microwave transmission, just so that they can get, I think, a couple of milliseconds faster. And then they were doing all these FPGAs, and just so that, again, they can execute code on the hardware as opposed to having to write software. I mean, the amount of overhead and complexity and cost goes up so drastically when you need to optimize those couple of milliseconds to be faster than the exchange themselves. So again, it's about cost and how much you're willing to invest into those extra milliseconds and so on.
Sure, and in your example, I guess the return on investment was pretty high, so they were willing to go all that extra mile to achieving that extra milliseconds. But most of the cases are luckily not like that, in my opinion.
No, not at all. For most web traffic, you're happy with just 1 second or 3 seconds on a P99, right?
Exactly.
So for the machine learning stuff, are you guys building all your custom models and serving them yourself, or are you using some of these built-in AI services from AWS?
We actually build our own models at the moment. That's not my area of expertise per se. I can't elaborate on it too much, but guys are building their own models and they are running them. So they don't use SageMaker, or they use SageMaker only for like POC or prototyping stage, and they mostly build their own models and try to run them themselves. So guys want to run like a big amount of data quickly, like to do some analyzing and stuff, they use SageMaker. But I think they mostly use, like they build them themselves, the models, and run them themselves as well.
Okay, that makes sense. And you also mentioned the step functions earlier, which is something that I'm really interested in personally. Can you tell us a bit about what you're building, what sort of things you're building with step functions?
Well, it's pretty new, so it's still work in progress. I can't tell yet if it's going to be a success or not, but we are trying to rebuild this new newsletter management system that we have, so that the newsletters that we send to the customers, like for example with new programs that are coming up or shows or something, we try to rebuild it based on a step function, so we will have some workflow management done there. Like we would have a possibility to enrich the newsletter or newsletters, or personalize the newsletters based on the preferences of the given customer. And that's the idea, but it's still work in progress. So let's see how it pays off. But we are trying to use the dynamic parallelism feature that came at reInvent. So it looks pretty promising at the moment. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it works.
Yeah, that's a pretty sweet feature. I've been waiting 2 years for that, for them to announce it. So I was really glad that it finally came out. Opened up so many different use cases around MapReduce and other things that I was waiting for, that I thought the step function was going to be a good fit, but just couldn't do that. The dynamic parallelism, I had to do all these things myself to push things into SNS, listen for some return or some signal from Lambda.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, you and I have a very similar history of going from on-premises to the cloud, running EC2 containers, and now doing serverless. So what were some of the biggest changes for you as you go through this sort of change of paradigm of how you build and run and ship software?
That's a really good question, because I think I've never realized for myself personally when the change happened. I just like tried the serverless and then I got hooked on it, and I just kept on going. But I think that the bigger challenge is that the learning curve nowadays for the serverless, if you start from zero, I think it's pretty steep, because there are all these services that you have to know, and many of them are so similar, and they all have these details, and you have to be able to choose between different services that are available. And on the other hand, I think you said like about a paradigm shift, and I can totally relate to that, because I think it's a totally new paradigm of developing software, and it requires that paradigm shift. And that paradigm shift should be conscious effort from the developers. So they need to want to go there in a way to be able to fully get the full benefits of the serverless. And as maybe surprising as it might be, that the biggest challenge, I think, or one of the biggest challenges, is the resistance to this change that you see from, for example, more experienced developers who are used to doing certain things in a certain way for a long time, and they are the most productive in that way, and they don't want to change. And again, in my opinion, it's fine if they get the value, the customer value, more quickly in the ways that they are used to work. I'm not gonna force serverless on them, you know. And the thing is that I think part of the issue is that with AWS, they are releasing their new services in a pretty infant stage, so they are pretty raw when they come out. And I think that can be both strength and a weakness, because like you get the services to the end users, you get the feedback from them, you can iterate and develop. But then again, for some users who will try the services on the very early stage and get some negative experience with them, they might be not that willing to give it another go, you know, later on. when the time comes. And I have heard a lot of, I've seen a lot of scenarios where somebody has tried, for example, I don't know, API gateway like 4 years ago, and it didn't deliver the latency wise or cost wise or in some other way, or didn't have all the features necessary at that moment, or somebody used to have a lot of problems with DynamoDB scaling, which should have been done, like, or with DynamoDB throughput, I mean, and with all the scaling by hand, and they didn't even look into the, you know, new auto-scaling possibilities and so forth. And of course, the classical one is the Lambda with a cold start. And if you ask somebody who just tried Lambda like 4 years ago and they tried to build an API and then they had a terrible experience with the huge latencies and then they said never again and they are not kind of following what's happening in that world. So they are stuck, their mindset is stuck that like few years back in that negative experience, and then they get like a confirmation bias effect every time there is a, they hear about some challenges with serverless solutions. So the first thought is that you shouldn't have used serverless in the first place, you know? So I think that's pretty challenging in a way to turn those people around and to show that things are developing and the serverless world 4 years ago and now are pretty much two different worlds altogether. And that's, I think that's the beauty of serverless in a way that, which I like a lot, is that if you build something today, and like, for example, the API I was mentioning, if you build the API today and you have certain latencies today, the chances are pretty high that in a year you're going to have lower latencies rather than higher latencies. So like we are getting improvements all the time and let's kind of without even doing anything ourselves. And I kind of enjoy it quite a lot. But yeah, I sometimes feel like I'm a broken record when I always suggest like serverless as the first option. But then again, when another person from my team chooses a Lambda for their new prototype or POC, I feel like it was all worth it, you know? It wasn't in vain.
Yeah, I'm very much like you in that particular sense as well, that I'm also serverless first whenever I talk about new projects, whenever I'm working with others. But I do think this paradigm shift is a bit of a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it does open up a lot more optimization and opportunities going forward, especially as the platforms themselves matures and improves over time. And as you said, the best optimization nowadays is just do nothing. Your code is going to be faster and cheaper in a year's time as the platform themselves improves under the hood. But at the same time, it also challenges a lot of developers' identity, because you see a lot of people, I guess most of us have the same thing as well, that if we spend all of our careers building with one set of technologies, we identify ourselves as C# developer or Node developer, never mind the fact that the only value, the only reason why we are employed is not because of what we use, Node, C# or whatever, it's because we produce business impact at the end of the day.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think in that sense, the conversation about serverless versus not serverless sometimes is pretty similar to, programming language choice conversation, because there will be people who will be defending that particular language that in their opinion is the best and it's the one to rule them all. But I guess the reality is there's no one to rule them all concept. There is like preferences and what are you most productive with and what can you like create the value, business value with the best.
Yeah, absolutely. And even though there is a lot of learning curve involved, especially if you jump onto AWS today, there's just nearly 200 different services. Even though I think you can be very productive, especially if you're using serverless, if you just learn a small handful of services like DynamoDB, SNS, SQS, maybe Kinesis, API Gateway, maybe like 6-7 different services. If you just know reasonably well, you can use them to build most different systems. Most workloads can be done with those just a few handful of services. A lot of the things that you have to learn and that are actually difficult to learn, especially around networking, you almost don't have to touch them if you stick to just the serverless components. Of course, they can't do everything. The moment you need to go into relational databases, you've got to learn about VPC again, you've got to learn about RDS, which are quite complex machineries with lots of different configurations and loads of different options that you have to set up yourself. So in that case, what are some of the biggest challenges that you see with AWS right now in terms of the tooling, in terms of platform limitations?
Well, I would think that the main challenge for us really is not directly related to AWS. It's rather the Terraform that we are using. And don't get me wrong, I do love Terraform. That's my preferred weapon of choice in a way. So I do choose it over CloudFormation. We are using it across the entire organization, so it's a pretty much kind of a given thing to us. We have a lot of tooling on top of Terraform, which makes like life easier. We have a lot of prepared modules that our ops team has created and all that, and it works great. But I guess you know pretty well that Terraform is not the best choice for the serverless stack. So if you want to create a simple API gateway Lambda DynamoDB, well, it takes you like an enormous amount of lines of code to write. And of course, you kind of get this weird sense of satisfaction and achievement when you actually make it work. But that's all time away from creating a business value, you know, that you spent on Terraforming. But for that reason, I personally found that developing prototyping in the AWS console is the, like in the case of Lambda, is the fastest way for me personally. So I stick to the console, I code in the console as long as possible. And then in the very last moment, I do the Terraforming. And one thing that has helped with that immensely was the Lambda layers that came out, I think last year or 2 years ago. So we use layers for external libraries or external packages, dependencies we need to use in our Lambdas quite extensively during the prototyping stage. So that's a kind of a good strategy for us. And then we do, I guess a lot of people speak about like testing and like different kind of concept of testing in a world of serverless. So at least what has been working for us pretty nicely is that, of course, we do a lot of unit testing for the Lambdas with the, you know, like the normal error handling things, like to see what happens when, for example, SDK returns an error or something like that. But then we also try to do some load testing in the test or staging environment. So to test the entire pipeline, you know, from start to end, to do the integration testing in AWS. So that's one thing. And I'm not sure it's a limitation really. I think it's again a new way of working. Maybe it probably needs some improvement and some more automatization, but it's just a new way of doing things nowadays, I think. And then with some limitations, I guess like logging is one thing that I have had kind of a headache with, you know, with Lambda like three lines of logging per each Lambda invocation. And then all of a sudden you have this huge amount of invocations and then you start to see that you are paying a lot of money for just logging. And those logs don't tell you much except for the Lambda has started and Lambda has ended, you know, that kind of thing. So the CloudWatch Insights have been a lot of help for logs. I use it a lot. Again, X-Ray has been good, but again, as you know, it has limited integrations. Like for example, for Kinesis, it's still not supporting X-Ray, and we would really, really need that. Though at last year's reInvent, I was promised that it's coming soon, so I'm still waiting. But I think it still is like a work in progress in a way. But I don't think it can stop anybody per se. It just needs a bit of that same paradigm shift, a bit of different ways of thinking about testing and logging and all that kind of things. And well, if you think about like particular services and some, you know, wishes from my wish list, well, we are, as I said, heavy users of Kinesis data streams. So the one feature I've been asking about over and over again is Kinesis autoscaling. So I'm still hoping it will come soon at some point. And then there are like small things related to this API gateway, HTTP API, that recently became generally available. I actually tried it, I think last week, and I really loved it, how simple it has become compared to the REST APIs. But of course, it's still lacking some features that I hope will be there soon as well. But again, I'm pretty optimistic with those because I know things will come. You just have to wait for them, you know?
Yeah, on that Kinesis auto-scaling, I've built quite a few auto-scaling for Kinesis systems myself in the past. The strange thing is that they have got that one API you can call to change the number of shards, but it stopped one step short and don't give you the auto-scaling option that you can just enable out of the box. Again, not sure why. Seems like one of the things that everyone is asking for, that you're using Kinesis. That one thing that you mentioned earlier at the start, that you put this thing together, it takes a lot of work, and then you feel really proud at the end. I think me and Joe Emerson was talking about this quite a while back, is that sense of pride. I think nowadays I'm starting to see that as a red flag almost. It's, you know, you have to work hard to get that sense of pride. So why do you have to work so hard in the first place? Could I have done it differently? Should this have been a service?
Exactly. Yeah, I totally agree with you. But, you know, developers are strange people. No, we do have this sense of pride in doing difficult things. But yeah, I'm all in for simpler ways and simpler things, for sure.
So I do think that's where, you know, if you have to work hard to build something, maybe you should have used a service instead.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because imagine how hard it's going to be for you to actually, you know, take care of that going forward.
Exactly.
I think that's probably my list of questions that I wanted to cover. So is there anything else you'd like to tell us about, you know, what you're doing? Maybe Stellita is hiring?
Yeah, so I think we were actually one thing that I wanted to cover as well, if you don't mind, about the things that can be improved as well in AWS side. I think I kind of skipped some of the things I wanted to say.
Go for it.
Yeah, sure. So I think what could be very helpful is better documentation and better guidance from AWS side. I think it has become much better in recent times, but still, I mean, you get a lot of happy path documentation everywhere, and I would really appreciate more of the not so happy path options and what should you do when things go wrong. And that's the thing. Frankly, I'm mostly referring to your blogs when I do something or I start something new and I want to know how things are really working. Because, you know, like the official documentation is often more like to sell you the service. But as a developer, I would really want to know, like, what is it good for as well as what is it not so good for, you know, like patterns and anti-patterns kind of way of thinking. I think that would help a lot for the developers who are just starting with a serverless, because like you can really get lost in all that like abundance of services and information. And like things that I personally find myself working the most on recently is the error handling and failure handling and retries and the thing like built-in retries that I personally did know nothing about until I stumbled upon them in my unit tests and I tried to figure out what is going on here and I tried to find it from the documentation, but it wasn't too easy to find, you know. And you would think that's like a basic thing that should be stated everywhere, that the SDK does the retries automatically, but it's not really. I mean, maybe nowadays it is already, but at least at that point it wasn't. So at least I personally, when I talk about these things, I try to emphasize those kind of error scenarios, like to help other developers maybe when they bang their heads against the wall trying to figure out the same thing. So I would really want to for AWS to be more kind of brave to emphasize these not so happy path scenarios. And I think another thing that could be improved, and it has some, I mean, you can do it already, but a cost estimation and cost calculation beforehand for the serverless solutions, it's still pretty tricky in my opinion. And in the end, the best estimate you get when you put something in a production and watch over it for a month and then you see what the bill is. And if you are a new developer, it's so easy to do things in a way wrong with serverless, because you might get into this false thinking that serverless doesn't cost anything or it's very cheap, maybe because Lambda is very cheap. But when you are getting to a bigger scale, you kind of not so optimal architectures, you start to see the cost of them. Like you don't have caching, you have excessive Lambda invocations, you are over-provisioning your DynamoDB tables, you're invoking too many Lambdas and all that kind of stuff. So, or doing too many API gateway invocations. And those things should be kind of made easier for people who are just starting away. Because as you said yourself, there is just a bunch of services which you can start with. And that is true. But I think there's a lot of details about the services that you need to know in order to make a cost-efficient and reliable architecture in the end, like that will work in production. So I would want that AWS would support that better in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. With the thing with AWS is that being such a big company with such a wide range of different services they offer, they tend to be not opinionated almost by design. So they don't really tell you when to choose different services, like when to use API Gateway versus ALBs. Even though, you know, for someone like me, there's clear decision point based on the amount of traffic and the hook as a cost projection. You're going to be looking at, you know, there are some cases where API Gateway is just going to be excruciatingly expensive if you're running really high throughput system on it compared to ALB. Whereas for AWS, they kind of just give you this, I guess, a buffet menu of different things, options you can choose without much guidance on when you should choose which service to best suit your needs. Even for things like, oh, I need some kind of a queue, you have, if you think about it, you've got...
Exactly, you have so many options.
Yeah, like SNS, SQS, Kinesis, DynamoDB Streams, IoT Core, EventBridge. There's just so many different options when how to choose between different services. Like this whole lack of guidance from AWS is basically keeping people like me in the job.
That's true, though. There's a positive side to that as well.
But then there are also more, I guess, valuable things I could be doing. just tell you, oh, you should use EventBridge in this case, and use Kinesis in another case. The whole cost side of things, I think that is that's quite interesting. I do wish there's better prediction model for AWS build, especially when you're using some of these pay-per-use services, like I said, with DynamoDB and with Lambda. You know, how do you project the cost, especially when simple mistakes can become really, really costly. It hasn't happened that often, but I have seen quite a few people post about how they end up with a big bill for Lambda because they go into some kind of an infinite recursion. Like the really easy one to make is Lambda puts...
These horror stories about Lambda. S3. Yes.
Yeah, that's
the one. No, it's actually pretty easy to get overboard in a way, too enthusiastic and overboard with serverless, really, because it's easy to start with and then... You are maybe not that cautious about kind of following the costs as you would be in the case of EC2, for example, or some other services.
But that said, I still think a lot of these horror stories that we hear about, you look at the bill of how much actually people talk about, you know, a couple hundred dollars, not great on your personal account for sure, but in the grand scheme of things, I've seen people make far, far, far bigger cost mistakes with EC2 and containers. That'll make that look like a drop in the bucket.
it's a matter of perspective. That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, I've had companies running hundreds of EC2 instances, X4 large, with 5% CPU utilization or less. I mean, that you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars over the course of a couple of months, all just being wasted because they forgot to turn on auto-scaling or have really poor auto-scaling policies in place, or some simple mistakes around configuration. And there's also companies that are spending... God, I don't know how much they're spending on the net because net gateway charges you gigabytes transfer, right?
Been there, done that, yes. try making a mistake with net gateway and you will see the bill pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, so by comparison, some of the mistakes that you can make with Lambda and that's going to incur cost would be a very small cost by comparison to some other mistakes you can make in a containerized environment.
Yeah, but that being said, I would really appreciate like more transparency in a way, like, or predictability really when using, not even Lambda is somehow easy, but like I know DynamoDB was, a year ago, I tried to estimate what an on-demand DynamoDB would cost with our throughput. I got a different estimate every time I tried to make it. And of course, it might have been my own kind of fault that I couldn't do it properly. But then it probably tells something about how easy it is to kind of to find information and do the estimates. So.
Oh, yeah, those estimates are really hard because a lot of them have to take into account the size of the payload, which, of course, depending on what you're doing, is not always easily predictable, and all this rounding up and things like that. I don't think I've not seen any services that does a good job in predicting the cost of service, but there's a few of them. They do a reasonable job at tracking the cost and tracking changes so that at least you can see month for month, based on the decision that you've made,
right?
You know, what impact has had on your cost, so that at least you can react to it relatively quickly. But at the same time, I've also had a few projects with clients now that are using the pay-as-you-go model you get from serverless, and then building it into their own products so that you can offer them, you can offer your customers a pay-as-you-go sort of pricing model and use that as a cost advantage as well. So we've had to build some guest cost model ourselves so that we know, okay, based on the utilization, based on the service that we're using for supporting these customers' transactions, we are going to see this amount of cost, and then we can then put a premium on that so that we can then include that into our AWS, into our bill for the customer. So we've had to build a few things ourselves to build some kind of a cost projection models. But again, when you've got different tiering and all that, it becomes really hard to accurately reflect what you're going to end up spending on AWS. But hopefully what we build is close enough that we're not going to end up losing too much money. But again, with Lambda, everything is cheap around it, unless you're running at massively high scale, in which case you probably want to be moving things back into containers for just that one thing that's running already high scale. So we're coming up to the hour mark. So is there anything else that you may want to tell the audience, like maybe Solitaire is hiring, and how do people find you on the internet?
Sure. So for Solitaire, you can visit our website. It's solitaire.fi. And we are hiring still, even in the midst of pandemic. So there is a lot of options in those six countries that I mentioned in the beginning. So if you are interested at all, go visit our website. We also have some blogs that you can find from the website, like dev.solitaire.fi and cloud.solitaire.fi, like blogs that our developers are writing about all kinds of things, cloud, no cloud, serverless, no serverless. So go check that out if you want to. My personal Twitter handle is anahit_fi, so you can follow me. There are some blog posts that I have been meaning to do for a long, long time, so maybe now on the lockdown I will finally have time and write them up. So like about the data streaming things and serverless APIs and the step functions that I was mentioning. So keep an eye for those. I hope social pressure will help me to write those ones at some point soon. But yeah, that's about it.
Okay, that's great. And if you send me those links afterwards, I'll make sure that I include them in the show notes so that when this show airs, people can go and find and read about those new blog posts that you're promising us now.
Sure.
Okay, great. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Stay safe and take care of yourself.
Thank you. Same to you. It was a really great pleasure talking to you as well, and hope to talk to you someday again.
Yeah, hopefully see you again soon, either virtually or in person at one of these events.
Let's hope for the best, and yeah, stay safe and stay home.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's it for another episode of Real World Serverless. To access the show notes and the transcript, please go to realworldserverless.com. And I'll see you guys next time.